Episode 21 of the Six Star Business Podcast is coming right at you, dear listener. I'm Pete Daly Dixon, one of your two co-hosts. The other co-host is
Aveline Clark. Thank you.
Woo-hoo!
So great to be here. Here we are, episode 21.
What's been the highlight of your week?
Week was buying a wetsuit.
Very cool. Mm. Yes, getting cold over there.
Yeah.
23, 24, flipping freezing. Goodness me.
Oh my gosh. What about you? What's the highlight of your week?
Oh, that's easy. We went out for the first time in, it seems like, I don't know how long. There's a friend of ours, she was 50, and lockdown is now at a place where you can have 30 people outdoors, so we were just outside. The Prosecco was flowing, the Scotch was flowing. They had a vegan chili for us. They had, you know, meat stuff for others, but so we were able to eat. Ah, amazing.
Wow.
Yep. I think we got home knocking on 1 o'clock in the morning. So that gives you an idea. I can't remember the last time we were out that late. Oh, dear. It
was
super.
Awesome. Yeah, good on you.
Yeah.
But luckily, we're not late. Our guests weren't late on this podcast. Let's talk about our guests for our episode 21. Who have we got, Pete?
We have Gary Wise and Steve McCann. Two incredibly smart guys, and that's just the amazing thing about this podcast. You get smart people together and just really exciting conversations happen. So if you're listening to this and you're smart, and if you're listening to this, then that means that you are, then please email us to podcast@sixstar.business and let us know who you are, and then we can invite you on the podcast and have a conversation with you. But until then, we give you Steve McCann, Gary Wise. Enjoy, and we'll see you same time, same place for the next episode.
Enjoy.
Here we are, yet again.
Here we are. And welcome to our guests, Gary and Steve. So lovely to have you here.
Hi there, folks.
Good day.
Good day, mate.
I was being time non-specific so that it could be listened to at any time of night or day.
This is very cool.
Very good. We're obviously in the midst of a pro, Av, so we need to up our game.
Well, just to kick things off, it would be great for our listeners to know a little bit more about you both. Perhaps you can start by sharing with us who you are, who you serve in the world, and where you live. I think we're evenly distributed in terms of geographical location on this episode. So who wants to kick us off?
Steve's going to go. I can see
it. To you, but I say I'll get going. Right, I live in Brentford, which is in slightly less fashionable West London. So go to West London, keep going, halfway to Heathrow, stop, turn left off the M4. That's where we are. Although I'm moving back up to the countryside of Richmond in North Yorkshire, the original Richmond, later this year. Who do we serve? So I'm the McCann of Rhys McCann, as I sometimes say, if we were a pantomime horse, which end I would be. And we help people who work apart work together is my nicely rehearsed catchphrase. But what does that boil down to? We've been doing remote first work for a long time. Judy Rhys is the Rhys McCann. Fundamentally, it's been her work for over 10 years, which started in the remote sphere because she was a leading practitioner in clean language, a philosophy and a practice created by the late David Grove, a Kiwi, and Judy couldn't find enough people to get in a room because not too many people knew about it and the money wasn't not very well paid area. So she started working online and it also suited her personality in terms of not having to go and mix in rooms of hundreds of people. And that served as well. So when I joined her in the business 2.5 years ago, pre-pandemic, we were pretty happy working a lot with the Agile community, helping them with remote team working, team practice, team development, communication meetings and such like, and web events. And then the pandemic happened and all hell broke loose and we became super busy. We went from a small boutique business to a bigger business. And as at today, we're about to join another business and create something called the Institute for Online Collaboration. You heard it here first. That's coming soon. And yeah, life's changed quite a lot. Fundamentally around helping everybody who wants to have great and engaging online meetings, great online facilitation, and great online web events.
Fantastic. Wow. Looking forward to hearing more about that. Gary, what about yourself?
Yeah, Gary Wise here from SBIM. We're located here in Brisbane, Queensland. Sunny one day and blackouts the next. So, yeah, pretty wild time here in Brisbane at the moment. Look, we work with primarily professional services, businesses that are looking to grow and scale. We work with businesses that are typically faced with what we call ineffective marketing challenges. They're typically out there marketing. They're spending a dollar, but often they're spending one to get half a dollar back, or they're spending one to get $1 back. So we work with businesses to remove that ineffective marketing element of what they're doing and reverse that trend of simply seeing a dollar in and a dollar out. And our aim is, at a minimum, is to deliver a 4x ROAS, 4x return on ad spend. So for every dollar hopefully they're putting in, they're going to be pulling $4 out. And that tends to keep us fairly gamely employed, because that's not a bad return on your money and your time and your investment.
I think we should talk afterwards, Gary. That sounds fascinating.
You're on.
Brilliant. Don't you love collaboration? See, being in the right place at the right time.
That's it, isn't it? All about opportunity.
That's it. That's it. So I'll kick this off by asking a question that we ask all of our guests. Pete's flashing in and out here. And it's really to ask, what was it that attracted you to the notion of a six-star business to come on the podcast today? So if you think about the question, you're invited, you obviously had a conversation with Pete or myself, and here you are. So what was it that pulled you to that six-star business concept? Gary, do you want to go first?
All right, we'll tag team.
Excellent.
I must admit, the six-star business concept I'd not heard of. I was saying before we hit the record button that when Pete was saying it earlier, six stars are just – doesn't exist. So it's quite an abstract concept. However, what I aligned it to was business excellence. And what is business excellence? What does that mean? And what does that look like in a day-to-day business on the ground? What does actually excellence look like? And I think it can take a whole pile of different forms. We certainly have our idea of within side SBIM as to what excellence looks like. But I think depending on what industry you're in and depending on what market you serve, excellence can take a whole, pile of different forms and shapes.
Yeah, it'd be good to dig into that. What about you, Steve? What attracted you and held your interest long enough to give up an hour?
I haven't given up an hour. I've won 3 hours, I think, haven't I? You think about it. It just seems so intuitively right. So Pete and I met at a lunch club thing, I think, and I think I started talking about my interest in business. Only do good business, people out there doing stuff. Why? Just only do great stuff. Just look to connect, collaborate. Doesn't matter who wins, it does matter who wins, as long as you both win. So we were just conversing, and Pete was sort of interested in what I was saying, which is always gratifying. And it just emerged that we had similar philosophies, I think, with different words to go to it. So particularly, I describe my role as I usually say to people, do you know the game Tetris? And most people do. Most people our age definitely do. And Avline accepted there, sorry. And age question. So playing Tetris with the universe would be my sort of job description, chief tessellating officer, I put down at Connect Collaborative. And that's because when you can connect people and ideas that have found their time, then, and you both are looking for a great outcome, then actually business excellence becomes a default as opposed to an exception. So that's, and I'm too old to try and chase contracts that don't work for you, because it's just miserable for everybody. So really, it's the only choice.
That's an easy word to say, excellence. And there was a pivotal famous business book, wasn't there, back in the, was the 80s, In Search of Excellence. And obviously the business landscape has changed a lot since then. But let's dig into that. What is excellence? What is it? What does it mean? What is it about? And why is it important?
I think, and I don't think it's limited to our industry, but I think the customer is just so educated and they've got so many options these days, that if you're not meeting expectation, I don't think you've got a hope. but it's not about even just doing a good job these days. A good job is what's expected. I think business excellence has to go over and above just delivering what is expected. A happy customer is what should be the standard. I think that goes without saying. That's the result we want. But delighted customers and customers that become advocates for you, I think, is heading towards the business excellence. And I think that's delivering over and above what, you know, an expectation is. And because the customer can so easily vote with their feet and now vote with the keyboard, it was one thing to have the customer not return back through your storefront because of some sort of unmet expectation. But now with online reviews and social media and whatnot, it doesn't take much for things to go horribly south quickly.
I think if excellence is scoring tens across the board, then, you know, maybe I'm going to go off script here, because I think there's a number of factors. There's a combination of you've got to have some talent in what you're doing. Just working really hard probably isn't going to get you excellence. You've got some talent. And you've got to work really hard. There's no room for talented but lazy people. So you've got those two things. But I think there's a third thing, putting some tension in it for me. We're allowed to make mistakes at Reece McCann. We're absolutely allowed to make mistakes. As long as you use one, you don't make the same mistake twice. It's a learning. And it comes out of ambition, not indolence or anything like that. So I guess we're not excellent in that regard, because excellence, I suppose, if that's peerless 10 out of 10s across the board, that's not in the contract here, and it's not in the contract I have with any of my clients either. Because as long as we're striving for something really good, then learning and experiments on the way is part of the blend.
Yeah, I like that learning, that space. That's something we also, I suppose, pride ourselves here, is that I think if you're not extending yourself, or should I say, making mistakes often is a result of extension. And I think if you're not extending yourself, you're not growing. Therefore, I think you have to have an allowance for the odd, you know, mistake here. But as we always say, it's not the fact that they're going to happen. It's how we react, and it's what we do when we identify that, I think, puts the excellence back into the business rather than the fact the mistake happened in the first place. Because let's face it, we're all human. One of the things that's my bugbears is grammatical errors and spelling mistakes going out through. It happens, but, you know, we try and put practices and systems and processes in place to make sure it doesn't happen. But when it does, it's not about throwing a tantrum. It's again going back and trying to have a look at how we can improve, because usually it's a breakdown in a system or a process rather than a constant human error.
To extend the thought of processes and systems, I am actually a great believer in processes and systems, but as long as they're ones that don't constrain imagination and flair and what have you. So absolutely yes to imagine to processes and systems and checklists. You've got a product out now which is all about engaging online meetings, which is an asynchronous product, and it's absolutely chock full of checklists and protocols, because they're a fabulous foundation, really. That's good practice, but to get excellence, I think you've got to go beyond that and be, and yeah, try jumping out of a tree with some wings on and see if you can fly, I suppose, in a way to test those wings. Sometimes you do it over water. That's a good idea. Be able to swim.
So taking risks, is that part of it?
Excellence has to be about pushing some. I mean, you can, I suppose, be really excellent at the basics, and there's absolutely a place for that. But for me, six star would be, wouldn't be really good at the everyday. You really have to have something beyond that to get that six star. And that's a place of risk.
Okay. Continuously.
Forever, ever, because if you're not going forward, you're going back, I think. Innovation, we're looking at making online web events engaging in a world where the platforms are changing, people's expectations are changing, everybody's got Zoom fatigue. Trying to get people on a Zoom meeting now is getting harder and harder, because everybody's worked out this super efficiency. Oh, I don't have to travel between meetings anymore. Great. Everybody, how many people do you are saying, great, I can spend 10 hours in meetings today instead of just 4 hours and have some travel and free time to think? Mm-hmm. No, nobody's saying that. No. They're all saying, oh, crap, I'm not going to that. Unless you make it engaging. And people they've been bitten. They've had some poor experiences. And they've gone to online events, which is something we spend a lot of time on, and got so disengaged and fed up. And, of course, they're sat at their laptop. So what do they do? Hands up, who hasn't gone in, done their shopping, done their email? Oh, yeah, Pete is smiling. Yeah, we're all laughing. Yeah, all done it. And then you've got the double doom loop, haven't you? Because you get disengagement. And as soon as somebody's disengaged, what's it like if I go like this, if you're talking? It's all right, I can hear you. It's all right, I can hear you. Keep going. I can hear you. It's like, what?
Yeah.
People do it. And when you're doing your emails, that's what you're doing to everybody
else. For the people listening to this, not watching it, Steve just picked his phone up there and started scrolling through his newsfeed to be distracted. So it's interesting you bring it up about online events. I mean, this is an online event we're gathering here. It seems to me that, well, it doesn't seem to me, it's evident that our experience of online meetings is generally not 6-star. And as meeting online is far more part of the business landscape now than it ever was, what are the constituent factors that our listeners need to take into account to ensure that part of their business is 6-star, whether they're meetings internally or externally with prospects and customers?
I've spoken quite a lot. Let me just say one thing and then ask Gary to develop his stuff. I'll just say the quality of your attention can determine the quality of another person's thought. That is pretty central to our work. And I know it's not our quote. I have to attribute. Well, Gary, while you're covering for me, I'll desperately remember who said that first.
I've never heard it, so I've got nothing. I can't help you on that one.
Nancy Klein from A Time to Think. The quality of your... So the one thing I would say, the quality of your attention can determine the quality of another person's thought, and discuss, grow from that. That for me, in terms of online engagement, is important. If you are giving really high quality attention and encouraging other people to take their turn in talking, which is why I'm going to pass the baton.
Well, let's discuss indeed. And it seems to me to be something that extends far beyond online meetings. So Gary, when you heard that bombshell, nutshell, quote, whatever, from Steve, did it land? Did it resonate? What is it? What does that mean to you? That your attention, what is it? Your attention can...
Attention. The quality of your attention can determine the quality of another person's thought.
How do you respond to that?
Yeah, look, I think one of the things we've noticed dramatically, and our engagement, not so much with our clients, because we try and... We tend to have a lot more touch points with the prospect in the the dance, the acquisition stage, than we tend to once they're onboarded, simply because the whole process typically is, in our industry, is very front-end loaded. There's a lot of work to be done at that early stage. And if you looked at it potentially from a graph, there's a lot of work at the start of the engagement. There's where the engagement is. It peaks for a while, but then it tends to nosedive. And that's not because we lose interest or we lose desire to perform or work. It's just that's the machine starts to take over and things tend to become a little bit smoother because it's going through, again, as I said before, systems and processes. But up until that point, when we're dealing with prospecting or dealing with clients through sales meetings, and that's primarily where I'm doing my face-to-face, I must admit that I think I've replaced a lot of the meetings with Zoom calls, because I've got a start time, I've got a deadline, finish time, and I tend to be a lot more stricter with my own time and more respectful, I think, of my prospects' time when I'm doing it via Zoom rather than doing the face-to-face. Because I find myself personally, I tend to drift a little bit, and if things are moving along nicely, you tend to get a bit elastic on the meeting, where I think I'm a lot more, I have a lot more purpose, I have a lot more, my energy is a lot more direct, and I think I get a better result when I'm focused in on a time frame, which I find that the online, let's call it the Zooms, tend to offer me. So I'm a big fan, and I think it's actually helped my productivity in a positive way. And I think now when I do the face-to-faces, I think it's now even, I'm becoming more and more aware that my time is valuable, my client's time or my prospect's time is valuable. Let's get this moving and let's stick to the time frame. So it's definitely working for me.
In terms of another thought I've had, I'm interested to know how those conversations go, Gary, when you've got that focus there. And do you spend most of your time talking or listening? Do you have any sort of meter or pattern to the talking, listening?
And it's a habit, I suppose, that I got out of for a long time but have now got back into, is the meeting agenda. I found has been a something that waned, certainly in my processes, where I've gone back to, particularly over the last 12 months, probably 18 months now, going back to a meeting agenda. For us, in terms of the process, it's all about the questions, because typically once we've got the information, we can then sort of go and process it, but it's that information gathering. So for us, it's very much about the asking the questions to gather the information, to go away and do what we need to do to formulate the solution. So I find that we have a very, in terms of my client discovery process, we have a, depending on what sort of, for example, service we're talking about or what the initial contact was about, there's a prescribed set of questions that we go through, and that forms part of the agenda. So we do end up being able to, I do end up staying on time a lot better because of agenda and a prescribed set of questions, which again, to answer your question there, Steve, is primarily about asking questions.
What kind of questions?
Typically what we're looking for is get an understanding of where the customer's, what the customer's journey has been. Because I think oftentimes the mistake is prescribing a pill that they've already taken, and that never works. I've heard it so many times, and you get to the end of your spiel, and I've watched it happen. You get to the end of the spiel, and the customer goes, oh, yeah, I tried that. It didn't work. Well, yeah, it's not to say that it's the wrong solution. It's maybe it's just that the customer was unable to make it work. But by not asking the right questions, you could have saved yourself a hell of a lot of time.
Yeah, what kind of that? It didn't work. I tried that. What kind of that? If you unpick that, you might find it was a different that to your that, mightn't you? It's. I found that there's more. Oh, there's so much to unpick there. Right, the agenda. I mean, I love having the agenda. Oh, name check. Lucid Meetings. Elise Keith's Lucid Meetings. Absolutely love it. I have no financial interest in that. It's just really good stuff, and she's an absolute dream to work with as a collaborator. So check that out. It's got really good online resources. And what kind of questions? And then people. I just think there are so many. So people, the people who, if I ask you a question out, do you want to be understood or do you want to understand others? You only get one. Which one will you go with? Yeah. Everybody vote now.
The latter.
To be understood or to understand others.
To understand others.
Understanding others is so much higher value. But if you just look dispassionately at your experience and other people's behaviors, I think most people actually want to be understood. Well, that's their behavior. Their existential evidence is, I want to be understood.
Why do you think?
Because being misunderstood is horrible. And you feel judged and like, no, it's not that. There's injustice, there's misunderstanding, there's getting it wrong, there's being thought less of. And so that's a huge driver to hit the be understood. And sadly, what we mostly do to be understood is what I'm doing now, which is talk and explain and explain. And actually, if you listen more, so we've got something, the collaboration influence cycle. Pay attention, direct attention. I know this, Pete will explain to those who can't see. So it's a circle. Start on the left, mid-left, about 9 o'clock, pay attention. And that's about what people say, what they don't say, how they look, atmosphere, smell, everything, who they are, where they're from, what they've experienced. And then you can direct, if you pay attention to people, then it's a much better place to go through to directing attention. And the best way to direct attention is to ask questions. And the best thing about questions is nice open questions, and then listen. And then you do that again and mature the model, pay attention, direct attention, pay attention, direct attention. And then you can go to the bottom of the cycle, which will be to speak up, which would be an influencing piece. But if you do it really well, you don't have to go to the speak up, because if you are genuinely interested in a win-win, in a collaboration, then, and this is the brilliant, the excellence of the collaborative influence cycle, is you're influencing yourself as well as somebody else by listening. It's not, I start with an outcome. Only I can win. I start with an intention. I discover the other person, where they're from, what they need. I compare that with what I think I wanted, and I'm prepared to move. I'm prepared to say, look, that's not me, mate. You need to go and talk to Gary Weiss. And you just do that. Or you say, you develop, and you can do this quite naughtily. If you're in charge of the questions, in clean language is the principle, if you don't influence the client. But I've always thought, if you're picking the questions, don't go kidding yourself, you're not influencing the conversation, because you are. It's like shining a light on a wall and making somebody follow it. So be really purposeful and thoughtful about that, and be ethical and be kind. And then if you do the listening thing, and here's the paradox. The more you understand others, the more they understand you. You've just got to start in a slightly unusual place.
That's probably why it's one of Stephen Covey's seven habits, wasn't it? Seek first to understand before being understood.
Oh, did somebody else say it first? All right, okay.
There's nothing new under the sun, Steve.
I often thought Stephen Covey was brilliant, that the way he anticipated my thinking by so many years. Yeah, that's a great way of putting it.
Well, as you were talking there, Steve, it occurred to me that perhaps part of the essence of a six-star business is coming at it from a point of view of being in collaboration with our customers. And if we are in collaboration and we are following that kind of collaborative influence cycle that you're talking about there, then it can't fail but to be a six-star experience for everybody. But I'm sure it's not as simple as that.
Hmm.
Do you see yourself in collaboration with your clients and customers, Gary? Or
yeah, we got a saying here that, our success is our clients' success. And this is where I think over the years, this is our 13th year, and I think as the business has matured, as I've matured as a business person, I suppose a theory, philosophy, whatever you want to call it, that one of the early stages of business is when you sort of move out of that stage where you're generating a revenue for yourself. You're in business, you basically got yourself a job, you call it your own business, but it's a little job and away you go and you're earning revenue and that goes in your back pocket, that pays your bills. There's a big step between then what we call building a business, which is then sort of the business now starts to make the decisions, not you, based on your pocket. So, and the reason I raise that is that I think the decisions we make along the way, we start off, they're about us. And I think as you mature, you start to realize that the decisions you make have to be about the customer. Therefore, for us, as I said, our customer's success is our success. So we become a lot more selective as to the customers we take on, because we can't work and succeed for everybody. And I think that becomes a big differentiator, is being able to know when, and you identified it before, Steve, you ask a certain amount of questions, you get the data back and you make a decision. You've got to go yes or no, do I engage or do I not? And I think that's part of being a business excellence, a six-star business, is knowing when to engage, because you can't be everything to everybody every time. I think it's that knack of being able to select the right client, and it's a partnership, absolutely, because I don't think we've ever had a success where we haven't had a partnership with the client and we've worked incredibly close with them. It just doesn't happen at a distance. It doesn't happen in a vacuum.
It's a gold nugget there, just for the record.
There is. The power of saying no, I think, is important, and saying no for a reason. You can't be all things to all people, Gary. I completely agree. And I think the maturity thing's true as well, because I think in the earlier stage of a business, one can be fearful of saying no. It's more a case of, oh, it might, we can make it work. And then you learn that won't always be true. And some things have to be passed over, passed on, passed by in order to stay with the excellence.
And that, I think, is going back to what you said earlier about feeling uncomfortable. Yeah, and going out and taking a risk, because it's taking a risk to say no, because the potential fear of what might happen. Well, I'm saying no to some money, or I'm saying no to this person. Does that mean that, where's the next person coming from? So there's risk involved in that on a number of levels as well.
There can be a win in there if you put somebody in touch with somebody else and just say that's a better match. Then that's actually, I've done that. That works pretty well.
That's, I like
a nice
that.
Second place.
Imagine if we all had that kind of outlook, a purposeful outlook, where we genuinely cared about the outcome of the person we're talking to. So, Gary, you've gone through your discovery process. You've asked a lot of questions. You get to a place where you realize this potential customer is not 100% aligned with you, your values, your business, but you think, oh, actually, there is someone else. I really want to see you succeed. So how about you speak to, I'm going to put you in touch with Cindy Jones over here, who has a business that is far more aligned with you, and she will be able to help you far better than I can.
I think it's part of it. I truly do. And I think those businesses that make, let's say they make the wrong decision by taking on the client, only one, I think, end up, hurting themselves. And secondly, that particular client is going to have a bad experience. And what we tend to find is that they hang on to that bad experience. They may even forget who. Often I talk to a client and say, can you tell me, try and dig a little bit deeper. They don't even know, they don't even remember who it was, but they just carry this bad taste in their mouth and they carry that forward. And unfortunately, that bad taste in their mouth, it leaves its residual, it stays there. They carry it with them. And, you know, it becomes part of their limiting beliefs that, you know, tend to hold them back because of this single one experience. And it could have been avoided if the person who delivered that poor experience actually manned up and said, you know what, this is not the right fit. This is not going to work. How about we have a look at working or introduce you to this person or go down this road or, you know, potentially come back and see me in 6 months' time when you've got this and this sorted out. There's a big maturity, I think, that a business has to go through to get to that point. And it's part of that being comfortable in your own business skin. And I think a lot of people, one of the things I hate hearing is this whole fake it till you make it thing. That drives me insane because I think it drives a lot of this getting outside of your lane. And I'm all about, you know, pushing boundaries, don't get me wrong, but not at the detriment of my clients.
Yeah, integrity, never fake a thing. Can I talk about values here? Because I think it's really germane. I spent 17 years prior to working with Judy in the Remote Together sort of Rees McCann work in humanitarian security, which came out of a background in the military a long time ago. And so humanitarian security, people used to say to me, oh, you're in the army, were you? And it used to really annoy me because like, yeah, but it's really got rock all to do with human, with what I'm doing now. It's just a coincidence. Like, oh, no, it's obvious. And I was like, no, it's not. It's really different. And what was really different about it in the humanitarian security principles was the first question in any piece of humanitarian security context awareness is, who are you? There's a cycle. I won't go through the whole cycle. But who are you? Where are you? And all the rest of it. But who are you? And who are you? It's not about your name or anything. It's about your values. And it was really important. I did this with the business as well. And I'd be curious to know what other people think about this, that if you can be really clear about your business ethics, values, what you do and what you don't do, then actually all these decisions about what you do and don't do are really easy. It's only when you aren't really clear about your value proposition, what you don't do, who you work with, and that can express itself in different ways on specific niche of work or the kind of client you want to work with or the kind of client you really are not cut out for, because it's going to be miserable for both of you. So the more time you spend, and certainly on this coalition that we're developing now with Impact Basis, it's about, are we aligned? Do we have, and aligned doesn't mean the same. It encompasses diversity, difference of opinion and everything. And you can still be aligned. That's another big subject I'm interested in. But when you've got the values really clear and worked out, then hard decisions become easy decisions. Has anybody else found that?
Totally.
And I think the other part too is particularly when you're working with a team, the team can make those decisions as a business unit. Everyone's singing from the same song sheet. If that's outlined somewhere, then you're going to have an inconsistency with inside your business, and ultimately those are things that can creep in without you even knowing. So,
what kind of song sheet? Let me pick on that one, Gary. What kind of song sheet? Because I'm not sure I agree. I agree with what I think you mean, but I can take song sheet and change it to script.
Sure.
And I don't want the same script. I'm more into jazz and syncopation, more into people who are philosophically aligned with each other, but don't necessarily, and it's not orchestrated. Sometimes we're orchestrated because an orchestral piece can be excellence, but sometimes you've got to get into jazz, haven't you, to find different, I mean, I don't particularly like jazz, if I'm really honest, but as a metaphor, people riffing off each other and going off piste, but staying within the philosophy, that's actually excellence.
Yeah, it's a really good question, and I suppose where I'm heading with that is that I think, and part of one of the reasons why we have this is a bit of a sidestep here, but I think it's important. It's very common these days, particularly with remote working. One of the reasons why we do have an in-house team is because of that immediacy. It is because we can learn and listen, and we absorb. So, you know, when I may not necessarily be in on the conversation, but I can hear something going in the background. I can hear certain words and certain terminologies used. And then if I think that is not necessarily off script, because typically what they're doing is they're having a discussion with inside a framework in terms of dealing with a client. So what we're enabled to do, and I love that jazz analogy, Steve. I really like that. With being an ex-muso, often if you're riffing, you're playing in a particular key. As long as you play the notes that are inside the key, everything sounds fine. But as soon as you start throwing notes that don't belong in the key signature, things start to get a bit, ooh, ow, things start to jar. So what we're talking about is that we have the staff, whenever they're talking to clients about certain elements of campaigns or how we do things or whatever the conversation may be, they're working from within a framework, which gives them that freestyle ability but still gives them guidelines by which they move the conversation forward, or they use certain terminology, or they convey our values as a business with inside the framework rather than just plucking them out of the air.
Which is why I think I'm just developing a thought here, why in remote working, remote teams and the remote meetings and people, even hybrid, that's another thing maybe we should talk about. The ability to listen. So in musical terms, you've got to have the talent to play the instrument and the desire to listen to the other members of the band so that you're staying with them and not being brilliantly useless by doing your own thing. So that remote team thing, I can feel that music metaphor developing quite nicely. It's not only about the skill, you need that, but you really need the desire, the will, and the ability to hear what other people are doing and be get with them. That's quite an interesting metaphor to develop.
And we have one of our valuable senior staff members still working a couple of days a week remotely. And as much as I categorically agree that he is far more productive by being remote because he hasn't got the day-to-day challenges that eats into his time. But his value to the business is actually more when he's here because of what he contributes, not just simply doing the work, but what he actually contributes to the team. So, again, working on that analogy, that musical analogy, I think if you actually stuck the Beatles all on their own, you got four musicians. You put them together as a band, you got magic, you got history. So I think that's part of it. There's this little X factor somewhere in having people, you know, combining and working together. And I think me personally, that misses when you have this remote work. And I'm not saying it can't be done, but just I've never been able to do it myself.
It's easy not to get it right, and we're absolutely compelled by the belief that even better than in the room or your money back, even better than in the room or we fail. But I do get it. There is a magic in the room, and I actually think having both, if you can, there's upsides to being in the room, definitely. There's downsides. The traffic in London's back to pre-pandemic levels, and I just like it. I just don't believe it. I jump on my bike now. I just don't bother with the car. And with the other advantages you can get in terms of inclusivity, diversity, reaching, okay, there's a digital divide and that's perhaps something we need to work on. But, you know, particularly for you guys in Australia, the ability now to even more, I would hope and believe, in New Zealand, reach, the hours might not be great, but reach other parts of the world, it must be significant. Eh? It must be worth a bit of effort to try and make the remote work.
I guess there's a difference between remote meetings, and I was picking up from what you were saying, Gary, about just being physically proximate to each other in the same workspace. Is that what you were talking to there, that kind of value that your senior team member brings, or are you talking about being in meetings?
Yeah, for sure. And it's more the, and I'll put some meat around this, give you an exact example. One of our businesses that we run out of here is called WP Butler, which is a WordPress help desk. So you don't have to be a client of SBIM. It's a completely separate business. If you've got a WordPress website and you're in trouble, you can ring our hotline, you can send an email, you can hit us via web chat, or you can send us a message via Messenger. We'll generally diagnose the issue, make you an offer to solve it, and if you're happy to move forward, then happy days, you buy a ticket and we go ahead and solve that issue for you. That takes experience and being able to listen. You don't even sometimes have to know what the other person is saying on the other end of the phone to know, if you're the third person in the room, to know what the solution often is to the problem, simply because of the questions that the person who is on the phone is asking that you can hear. You don't have to hear the client at all. And I think sometimes that's also how we learn to solve, you know, individual problems, particularly for our business, is by simply listening to how another member of the staff solved that particular problem or the conversation, and how you learn simply by osmosis. And I think there's a tremendous amount of learning that goes on just simply by listening. So we embrace that with inside our business. So that's sort of where I was heading with. I think the value is there by just simply being part of what's going on and not sitting there. And typical IT world is this: headphones on, music playing, head down. I'm busy. That to me is not that's not the environment that I'm trying to encourage here with any of our businesses. It's more of a, can I help? Can I listen in? Can I help out? Can I chime in and potentially add value to the customer without even being part of the phone call?
Absolutely no dispute with that whatsoever. I get it. But we're trying to do the same thing, Gary. So our community that we've developed, and I think Pete's in it for sure, is called Remote Together. And it's that concept of striving for genuine human connection and togetherness in an evolutionary way, regardless of the remote aspect. We're trying to have our cake and eat it in a way in terms of have the best of remote, but strive also to compensate for the deficiencies of remote that absolutely do exist. And that's true. And I think liken it to the formal and informal agenda in a sense. There's the what we know we like about being together. It's a bit like when clients are planning an event, I always ask them to consider the outcomes and outputs they're looking for, the formal agenda. And that's fairly, people are quite good at doing that. And then I start talking about, right, what's, and this is where I think we get into the beauty of human togetherness is, right, what's the informal? What's not on the sheet that really matters to you? And that usually produces moments of reverie and thinking. Maybe they'll bring out a metaphor that's like what metaphor, the native tongue of the subconscious mind. You can develop it like that using some clean language skills. When it's great, it'll be like what, and you can get into the informal agenda, I tend to call it, which is often to do with connection, feeling good, team excellence, people getting to know each other, working together better, rather than we produce an action plan. That's the agenda item. But behind that, there's going to be, we become aligned within a project or in a strategy, that will be the informal agenda that sits behind it. And it's harder to do that online, but you can do it if you pay attention.
I love that formal and informal part. We actually run our staff meetings very much along those lines, where there's the formal part where we're hitting the things that we need to talk about in terms of a business, but then we have what we call round the room, where each individual shares the news in their particular area of expertise. Again, so we've got this cross-learning, because you just never know when you're going to need that little gem that's going to pop up. And because we're in such a dynamic space, the sharing of information is just so valuable because of the volume of information that we need to get through. So when you cut that up into 6-7 pieces where all the staff can take a responsibility as the head of the business, I don't need to do all that. I've actually got people that are doing that for me, and it can report back to me the little chunks that are going to be important. So I love that formal and informal approach. I really like that.
Hopefully they're doing it for themselves as much as anything. We were talking to a business consultant recently, and as we looked at the tie-up with Impact Basis, and saying, the CEO, he's got to be there to motivate his staff. And first of all, it's going to be a she, and secondly, If she's motivating staff, we've got the wrong team. We're doing something badly wrong there. But I think the informal part is what's so often missing from low-quality remote experiences, because it's so easy to create the formal agenda. And when you don't, I think of it as a Darwinian evolution. When we do our training, remote agile facilitator training, it's taking a great in-the-room trainer and helping them become a great online trainer. So Judy did a survey on what facilitators miss most from in-the-room training. She did this about a year ago. And it was so many of the things people missed was the cluster around the informal as opposed to the formal. We can tick all these boxes, and people are typically ticking all the boxes on remote meetings, remote agendas, remote everything, and still having a horrible experience because they're not going into the depth of right. And with all of that, what do we really want to have happen on the informal agenda? And then if you can work with people on developing ways to make that happen, and typically you get an IT answer to it, like, oh, we'll have a great big screen up there, really good speakers, it's going to be fantastic. You six can just work in here and the remote people can dial in, and it's only £10,000 and you're going to love it. It's going to change your world. And it's absolutely crap, because it doesn't achieve that one-to-one piece of connection, and you end up with a subgroup and people who can't be heard or seen, or they feel ignored, and you miss the informal part of it, which is the human-to-human part. For anybody who can't see Pete's face now, I can't tell whether he's curious or shocked.
I'm curious because I'm curious.
Say,
because
say something.
I'm
Pete.
Curious. I was just waiting for you to shut up. I'm only joking. Peter, first rule of podcasting, don't abuse your guests. No, I'm curious because it seems to me that getting that amount of clarity on the inform is almost making it formal. So what is the distinction between formal agenda and...
Purposeful. It's purposeful, Pete, but it's not formal because it's not scripted. You have an intention to allow conversation to flow, and you create... Here's what I think. You create the environment in which the unscripted can happen.
I love that because that's where you allow people to be who they really are. And I think that is the core piece of natural human to human connection, rather than the formal script of this is what you're going to talk about, this is what you're going to talk about, and let's go through this.
I think it aligns with what we were saying before about the framework. You know, there's a framework by which it can occur. And I think as long as the framework is there, you're on the right track.
So a bit like these podcast episodes.
Wow. Yeah, well, that's what I was thinking too, in that we set it off, we have a framework, we ask a couple of questions at the start, and then we allow it to unfold and look where we've come to. And can you believe we're at the top of the hour?
Already?
Yeah.
Yeah, we are.
I say it almost every time, and I don't want to say it, but I will say it, that it never ceases to amaze me where these conversations go from effectively the same question being asked at the top of the episode with every guest, that we find new avenues to explore. Some are tree-lined, some are, I don't know where to go with the metaphor.
Doesn't matter.
I want to see where you pull the highlights out of this one. And you got micro content for days.
Yeah, and it's interesting you talk about that, Gary, because I had a cold email from somebody that is developing a platform called Audea, A-U-D-E-A, which is a native search platform for highlights, basically, of podcast episodes. So you take a podcast episode, and you know, no one wants to sit through an hour's worth of this content to get to the one bit of gold. You had more than one bit of gold, but the specific bit of gold that Gary gave at minute 13 and the bit of gold that Steve came up with at minute 17. So to actually cut your episode up into these highlights, and each one is registered on this platform. And you're right, but we're going to need a bigger team with editors that can do it. So if anyone's listening that wants to be part of the Six Star Business community and Six Star Business team and work with us as our editor, then get in touch, please. We need all the help we can get.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of work, but you'll learn a heap.
When you asked the question at the beginning about why I come here, I suppose what was in my head, but I didn't say out loud, was I think it'd be a good place to find out what I think. And thank you for giving me that opportunity to spar with Gary and stimulate thoughts off each other. Because it's, yeah, I mean, I have said that before, creating the conditions for serendipitous happiness and success. It just seemed to come out quite well at the end there. Thank you.
I think the dating service has matched us really
well. We got the hairstyles correct anyway.
I know, right?
Oh, dear. Can you see from there? Oh, okay.
Do you want to wrap it up and bring it in for a landing, to quote the inestimable Matt Kreis?
Yeah. I almost don't want to, but I will. I want to thank you both for taking us on this beautiful, windy, open road of exploration and unknowing where we're going. And it came back to the start, which was, why are we here? Well, we're here to connect, aren't we? And I love everything that you've brought. And like Gary, yes, we have a lot of micro content that we could mine through on this episode. I want to thank you both for coming and sharing and being vulnerable, transparent, and creative and open in your thinking. And that's what makes it.
I'm glad I didn't hear anything because I wouldn't have used it.
Thank you both.
You've been preparing your whole life for this moment, Gary.
Oh, well done.
This is the top, mate. It's all downhill from here.
I've peaked. of people.
Great.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to dwell on it, but you might as well stop now, mate. It's like... Actually, no, don't stop, because I would like to talk to you as I move. Our little business is going to become a bigger business with the Institute of Online Collaboration and everything, and I do actually need to talk about marketing, because my stimulated serendipity model has kept us over busy, but I don't think it's going to be enough for the next phase, so I do need to get some advice.
I just want to hear more about stimulated serendipity. That sounds great.
See the kind of opportunities we create.
That'd be a great opportunity. Yeah.
Great.
Sorry, Evelyn.
No, thank you both. And when I hit the stop button, just hang fire on kicking leave just to let Squadcast do its thing and upload in the background. But it's goodbye from me and goodbye from her. Here. We'll edit that bit out, I hope.
Yeah.
Okay. One try again.
It's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.
Goodbye.
So, here we are.
Another great episode.
Oh.
They never cease to surprise and excite and entertain and stimulate and how many adjectives you want to put in there or verbs or whatever. Grammar wasn't my strong point.
It blew me away. Like, I literally need to go back and listen to it and pause and reflect, press pause, reflect. It's one of those, because there was just so many little twists and turns and bombs and moments. And
I was almost trying to do that while the episode was unfolding. Like at one point, Steve said, the look on Pete's face, I don't know whether he's curious or shocked or whatever. Like, I was just trying to like hit that pause button and just process what had just been said. But you know, we're in a as live conversation, you just got to keep going. So there really is something in what Gary said about the micro content and digging in, and us both individually digging into the content that's being created to unearth it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just going to stay all these gold nuggets and thought bombs and things that can stimulate a train of thought, which could lead to another aspect of your business being 6-star, which you hadn't thought of before. We can't leave them buried inside the podcast. I just think it would be great to have a community. So I wasn't going to segue into this, but it's going
to
happen.
It'd be great to have
a community where each episode is almost like a crowd, crowdsourcing the content extraction from these podcast episodes. And obviously it does exist, community.6starbusiness.com. It's just such an incredible place to be and to hang out. What are your thoughts on that community, Av?
Well, look at the people we've had already, and look at even tonight today with these two guests, you know, how it's like, they'd never really met before, and now they're catching up and they're going to connect, and now they know a lot more about each other and they want to continue that conversation. And that's what community is all about. And they raised that was part of one of the nuggets in today's episode, was about the like-mindedness, the values, that part. We don't all have to be the same. We're not all lemmings or carbon clones of each other, but we are connected based on the values aspect. And at our core, humans are emotional beings, and allowing people to connect on that emotional level is why we need why we have community, and why we need to have that container to allow the connection to take place. And that's something that was really strongly discussed today in this episode, even though it wasn't in that language or those words, but it was around, yes, you can have a framework for a meeting, and yes, you know, it's really important to extract and ask questions, and there's different angles to look at that, but ultimately it's allowing people to be who they are and respect and care and allow and connect to another human being for who they are. And that's where having a space to honor that, like a community, is so important.
Yeah, and Gary also spoke very explicitly and deliberately about knowing who it is that you want to connect to. He was talking about it from a point of view of working with customers and clients, but it applies equally with people that you're in community with. Get clear about the people that you want to be close to, that you can learn from, you can trade with. It'll be really interesting to hear about how that the connection which kind of started on this particular podcast episode goes with Steve and Gary. And there's stories like that abound inside the Six Star Business community. So if you love what you're hearing on the podcast episodes and you want to hang out with both the guests and other people like you who resonate with that constant aspiration for personal and business excellence, then that's where we are, community.sixstarbusiness.com. It'd be great to welcome you there. So same time, same place.
Yep.
On whenever it is, we'll be here ready to have another episode. I've completely lost track with the recording schedule and two episodes a week.
Yeah.
We've got one going live a bit later on this morning, my time, another one going live on Friday. Kind of just got a sense that the ante is being upped and the momentum is building, and awesome, amazing things are happening in the Six Star Business world.
That's where we'll be. Thanks, Pete. I look forward to it. And thank you, dear listener.
Bye.
Bye for now.